Okay, hi and welcome. This is Dave Kruger. I'm CTA faculty, mentor and trainer coach with CTA for a number of years and Dean of Curriculum. I appreciate you being with us. I'd like to talk with a discussion with you about something that's very common in terms of what we do with our clients. I want to do a brief overview and comment to frame a discussion for your questions and challenges about coaching change. So what I'd like to ask initially, what's the one thing that you would most like to focus on about helping clients navigate change? Anything in particular you want to add to the hopper to be sure that we discuss? Anyone? If I don't hear from anyone, I will reflect on all the things that we've talked about in prior classes, especially at the beginning of classes as we talk about the most common things that we're challenged by, and I'm hoping to have you significantly benefit and walk away with something of value. So I'd like you just to think about it, not to answer necessarily out loud, although you're welcome to at any point. What's the hardest thing, the biggest challenge for you in becoming a professional coach? Now, marketing doesn't count. That's at best second. The hardest thing with every student, every coaching student I've worked with, is not to give advice, solutions, answers, and to refrain from camouflaging a suggestion as a question. Well, have you considered this? So think about, why is this so important to not give answers or advice or suggestions? Well, the first dilemma is that it shifts the point of reference from the client's story to the coach's story. And secondly, both coach and client want the coach to give advice or offer a solution. The reason? It forecloses the discomfort of uncertainty for both coach and client. So both of us are tempted to, coach and client. The brain wants to end dissonance by providing a closure. Even if the closure is not cause and effect, even if it doesn't work, it provides an immediate comfort. And it restores the default mode, no change. Also, consider this. Think about what happens when you offer an answer or even a fact or a belief to someone. And remember that beliefs, facts, information are all anatomical realities in our brains. The person immediately compares what you say to what they already know or believe. So, if that person's belief fits with what you said, they find ways to confirm it, confirmation bias. If the person disagrees with it, they immediately look for ways to refute it. And the result is they stick with what they already know. It's called in neuroscience the boomerang effect. Somebody is even more entrenched in what they already believe. So the simplest is to not pay attention to anything that would counter their beliefs. Inattention blindness. I didn't really hear that. I was thinking about something else. So, if you want to test this out, pick the next adolescent you cross paths with and give them a piece of your advice. And if you really want to create a vivid example, pick an adolescent in your family. So, what's the antithesis of information, suggestion, advice? This is the hardest thing for one particular group of people above all others in my experience, professional athletic coaches. They know exactly what every person on that court or that field needs to do, and when they tell them exactly what to do, it usually doesn't work. So what for them and what for you and your client would be the opposite of telling somebody what to do or giving advice? It's what we specialize in, asking questions. To ask a question, clear, brief, simple, specific, and what we know from neuroscience, 10 to 12 words or less, because that's what we attend to and retain. So with a question, there's nothing to counter, nothing to oppose, nothing to agree to. A question immediately creates a different framework, a collaboration, which is our framework in coaching. So I want to comment just a little bit about changing scripts and review some things and then open it for discussions and questions and your experience. A script refers to our basic default mode of experiences, expectations. We respond in the same way, and it creates certainty. We repeat, and it hardwires our brains, so we don't have to think about it. At a family gathering or a board meeting, we sit at the same seat each time. The last three times you went to your favorite restaurant, you likely ordered the same thing. It doesn't count that you changed the sauce on the appetizer. That's the job description of the brain, to hardwire our repeated behavior so we don't have to expend energy with uncertainty and considering various options. This becomes our script, our default mode of attachment, behavior, and emotion. Now, an ordinary citizen becomes a coaching client because their script isn't working in some way. They keep doing the same thing, expect a different result, but it doesn't work. Their beliefs and assumptions in an area simply don't work, and they still operate on the script of how they will respond and how they expect important others to respond. So let's review a few basics before a discussion together. So first, why do we resist change, even changing a story that doesn't work? What keeps people from doing what they know they need to do for themselves? And why will somebody repeat behavior that doesn't work, usually doing it harder, and expect a different result, even if it leads to lower energy or debt or plateaued careers or disappointing relationships? Part of the answer to why we resist change is in our minds. We repeat the same story because it's our default mode. It's secure and predictable. It may be limiting, but it's familiar. And we repeat because we know exactly how it's going to turn out. A new story, on the other hand, can create uncertainty, even trepidation. And the easiest and fastest way to end this discomfort is to go back to the familiar, the old story. People fail to change because they don't feel safe changing. Changing means leaving their home base of reality and the internal map that's synonymous with identity, the operating model. We tend to return to our default mode. So a basic human need is certainty, especially certainty that we can avoid pain and achieve pleasure. And the brain is a pattern recognition machine that tries to predict the future. So we look for what's certainty. Repetition, which is simply our collection of habits, can masquerade as effectiveness. Change, though, generates uncertainty and trepidation. Even a small amount of uncertainty cues our brain's error detection mechanism, and we avoid it. The other part of the answer to why change is difficult is in our brains. Here's a brief illustration. The hypnotherapist, Dr. Milton Erickson, told a story from his childhood in which whenever it snowed, he would be the first to get up and go to school so that he would create a fresh path in the snow. He intentionally created a really circuitous path, zigzags and indirect turns. He noticed that each person who followed him followed the same path, and at the end of the day, it was well-worn despite it being really circuitous. No one started a new, more direct route. He repeated this, and no matter how many turns and twists, every person continued to follow the pattern of least resistance. This is how neural pathways are laid down in the brain, by early experiences and repetition, until they're etched more deeply. Even if they don't work as well, even if they're circuitous and require way more effort, in most instances, change is perceived as a kind of threat to the nervous system, and we'll fight to protect from doing the thing we really need to do. We'll avoid it. This can show up as procrastination, perfectionism, isolation, defensiveness, unworthiness, imposter syndrome, or simply to avoid it, or as pushback from suggested change. The mind and brain both contribute to the pull of the old and the uncertainty of the new. So, and this is where we come in as professional coaches, to think creatively, new neural pathways need to be developed outside the cycle of usual experience. Stimulation for new insight is a circumstance where the brain can't predict what would happen next. This masquerades at times as simply a new question, or a nudge, what else, or how else can you look at that? An open-ended question. The catalyst is a novel stimulus, new information, new framework. This discomfort to move from the familiar old to the uncertain new becomes the challenge that we face with every client from the very beginning, because that uncertainty of newness can read as evidence not to proceed or intuition of a wrong choice. Think about how this is every step that your client will take. When they take one step into the new or the different, it will read, at least in some way, as this isn't what I expected. This isn't right. Now, if that's perceived as if it's intuition telling me I'm doing the wrong thing, or my gut tells me this isn't right, that's a misread, and that will create avoidance. So this is where we need to help someone revise their operating model step by step to frame this new experience as challenge, as opportunity. So here's the framework of that statement. Our brains can't tell the difference between excitement and anxiety. It registers exactly the same way. So how you frame it determines the mindset you use to boot up to deal with it. If you frame it as anxiety equals danger means better head for cover, it makes sense to stop or to avoid. If you frame it as excitement, then you look for possibility, for what can happen next, to how to proceed. It's a totally different mindset to look at challenge and opportunity. So this correct reading is something we may need to do with clients initially, especially at the beginning, because this can be part of a new, powerful navigation system. So I want to talk very briefly about changing scripts and then get to your questions and your comments. So here's the scientific principle behind this challenge of changing scripts. Facts, information, data, opinion, they're not enough to change anyone's mind. If they were, we'd work out every day, eat mostly vegetables, be thin, have a lot of money saved up, and most librarians would be billionaires. But this particular area of how our minds and brains work is the domain of what we do every day in mentor coaching. It's what we can do uniquely well to help our clients create and achieve success strategies. No other profession addresses this specific problem and challenge, certainly not as we do. Change is our specialty. Choice architecture is our methodology. So to revise a script that's not working, the first step, and you'll see in your outline, there are seven steps that I've incorporated into the acronym of ROADMAP. That's in your outline. I'm not going to go through all of these, but just simply to first recognize that you're the author of that story. Then, to own it, decide what to change, map the change, and put it into action. This is what we do as coaches, that if you focus just on the goal, that may not be as useful, because basically everybody has the same goal. Winners and losers have the same goal. What we look at specifically in coaching is to create a system to help someone, a map, because a map will tell you where you are, where you're going, how to measure progress along the way, and what's detour and distraction. You know the simple coaching model. That's the map for creating a coaching story for that segment of time. And the last step, the most important and powerful component, is to transform the identity for the client to make this new script a part of a revised and updated working model of how and who they are. And this is so important. And this is the last thing I want to say, and I'm interested in your question and what you think. The challenge is, if you just make a change and don't incorporate that into a revised working model, into the bedrock of identity, you'll revert back to where you were before. If you incorporate it gradually and systematically into a new identity, making it part of a new story, a new script, it will become permanent, and there's not a reversion back to the familiar. So I'm interested in your thoughts and questions, any situations or challenges that you have. What would be most helpful for you for us to talk about at this time?
Dr. Dave, I've got a quick question, which is, you know, I think you've given a great overview around, you know, what as coaches we face often with clients, which is the resistance to change. Oftentimes, especially with new clients, I think the challenge is identifying, you know, what the behavior is rather than kind of the top level, meaning, you know, clients can indicate they're going to change this or that, but the underlying behavior is actually the thing that seems to be most difficult to have changed. And so sometimes you can find a client who changes things very often. Or as a coach, you might find somebody who's, you know, changing their niche very often, but the underlying behavior that's required to actually see change might not be present. How do you suggest you explore that and maybe highlight that for a client or make them aware of that?
Well, that is certainly a ever-present issue, because often when someone has a challenge with change, they don't exactly, it's not necessarily resistance, but maybe simply that they don't know what the first step is. So I think to look at that specifically, to create a system and with a map of where you are right now, and to shrink the change to the next step, and to have a plan, a system, but it has to begin with right now. And what do you do next, and what do you do after what's next? And to create a systematic way to proceed, you cannot get too simple. And as soon as someone moves into even a slight abstraction, they lose the presence of right now and what's the next step. So if someone says, well, you know, I'm gonna contact my referral sources, my gatekeeper for that. You know, when you hang up the phone from this discussion, what's your first step to do that? In other words, I hear a beginning of a map, but I also want to get very specific so that someone doesn't get lost into abstraction or avoids for that reason. So this is part of the system to have a map, and the map cannot be too detailed, and that will help someone once they hang up the phone or log off from the video conference or the training to know exactly what they need to do now and next in a system for this hour, this day, this week. So that's where the system comes into play. This is the map. And again, the map is about where you are, where you're going, and how to measure progress along the way, step by step. And importantly, what's deterrent distraction? Because if you focus on something and then get distracted, that's a time to refocus. Now, Chris, does that answer that question? Or do you have other follow-up from what led to asking it from your experience?
That really helps. I think is the thinking then that from the map, the kind of the question back to the client can be, how do you get to those destinations or take those actions? And that kind of highlights the behavioral change that might be necessary.
Yes. And think about, and I often use this as a first and consistent model, how the simple coaching model is that kind of map for the coach and the client. Because the two questions that frame the focus of that conversation, whether it's 15 minutes or 20 minutes or in training it's 15 minutes, or it's what would you like us to focus on? And if a client uses some kind of abstraction, you know, well, I need to change careers, that's not a focus. That's an idea. That may be a topic. But I want to get to a specific focus, such as what would be a first step to give you some traction in that decision that could be used as a model for other things. The second question, and you guys know this, the second question is, where would you like us to get to in this conversation? That's the map. That's the beginning and the destination. The middle is jazz. Now, at the end, we want a closure, and the next to last question is something like, can you summarize in a sentence the most important thing you're taking away? And that's important to the client, especially because they're putting and summarizing what they've gleaned, what they're synthesizing in their output channel. That makes it more of a complete story and more of a memory. The simplest piece of research I've seen on this, University of Waterloo, did a study of matched pairs of people who read the same story. One group read it out loud, one group read it silently. They gave them a test. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better on the test. They created an output channel. They made it their story. Then, based on that, what do you commit to do in the next whatever period of time? If it's a week, what do you commit to do? So that's the action. And we know that when somebody commits to do something out loud, they're much more likely to follow through because it becomes something they want to live into. It becomes like a beginning of a different identity. If they commit to that, they're more likely to follow through. So that's the map. And it begins with a specific first step of a focus, and it's a model they can use after they hang up the phone or after they log off the video conference. So that's a great question and such a fundamental one for what we do as coaches and how we train for coaches. What do you want to add to that, Chris? Anything else that you think of or different?
I guess my only observation would be that sometimes it takes the client a long time to realize what the actual underlying behavior is that's impeding change or progress. And so, you know, you have to balance patience with the client against the recognition that you may have a client that is not a healthy coaching client at some point, and kind of call the question. But I think it's hard from the coach's seat to understand when the time comes to kind of make that judgment. It's really, I think, the imperative of the coach to kind of keep trying, because to your point on mapping, there's sometimes a lot of destinations that have to be reached and understood not to be the destination that was hoped before people are willing to understand what needs to change, either from a perspective basis or a behavioral basis.
I think that's so important, and just a couple of points to highlight what you said. Every algorithm that determines feeling, thinking, behaving is going to be manifest in the process of the coaching conversation. That's why, as coaches, we don't have to go into the past or ask why questions or look at the history of things. That roadmap is one way, a cross-section of looking at whatever a client presents. That's going to be an indication. Clients always showing us, telling us exactly what it's like to be them. It may not be conscious and logical and intellectual. 90 to 95% of the operating system is unconscious, but that's where we listen for the process, and that we know that what's important is going to emerge, so that whenever a client presents something, we're going to be listening for an unconscious bias, inattention blindness. We're looking for assumptions that don't work, things that are compromises, things that are avoid, all the things that we may need to look at together with them, which brings up the second, I think, really important thing, is that we develop a working alliance with the client from the beginning, so that the client knows unequivocally that we are 100% invested in their success. And with that working alliance, it's a we-ness, a togetherness, so that the client knows that whatever we do, it's for their best interest. What that means is that we can get away with saying some things once that working alliance is developed that may be hard for the client to hear. And when we do that in a collaborative way, that's our framework in coaching. When we do that in a collaborative way, then we can look together at things that aren't necessarily easy to look at, or ways to break the script, or whatever emerges at that moment. That's showing us exactly what it's like for the client. And that's why for mentor coaching clients, also with training with students, I ask in the beginning, may I interrupt you if there's something that I think would be helpful for us to look at this moment? And I give them permission to interrupt me too, because sometimes, since we're hardwired to talk in paragraphs, it's not as fresh, not as salient by the end of the third paragraph, and we go back to something. So this is a very active process that we engage in, and this is where, when someone says something a little bit more broadly, I'll ask what aspect in the beginning, what aspect of that would you like us to focus on? So when that behavior manifests, that's in vivo. I want to look at that together at that moment, because it will never be more in the foreground, more salient for developing a new story collaboratively than at the moment that it's there. But that does take a working alliance to be able to get away with saying what you need to say, so that it's done totally in a collaborative way. So great, great point. Other thoughts or additions to that?
So, Dr. Dave, is what you're saying that with your clients, as you're creating this, or they're creating their roadmap, what things they don't do are really opportunities to go deeper into the coaching conversation. Is that what you're getting at? So, you know, you say, you know, your client decides they're going to do X, Y, or Z, and they've got a plan, and it's specific, but, you know, the next session you get together, and they didn't nail that. You know, are you saying that that's an opportunity to further explore that, or maybe explore the goal? Was it too lofty, or I don't know. I just wanted a little clarification around that, because I think that can be a real frustration as a coach, is, you know, having a great coaching session with someone on a topic where you kind of help them to create their roadmap, but there's not, you know, they don't necessarily follow through, or there's something gets derailed. So I think that's something all of us face as coaches.
Absolutely, and I want to clarify two aspects of that. When I'm talking about the roadmap, I'm not talking about something that I actually talk about with a client or do in training with students, but it's just a concept of the steps to understand someone's experience and their story, and ways for us as coaches to think about it, to get the client mm-hmm. to recognize first what they're doing, and then to recognize that they're creating it, and then together to look at how well it works. So those steps are ones just for our organization and information about working with clients, not direct plays that we use
right.
with the client. So the other important thing, and this is so crucial that you mentioned, is when someone commits to do something, and it's very specific, and they begin the next session with as a check-in, and that they didn't do it. So here, this person is showing me exactly what it's like to be them. So there's no reason to start all over again and do a whole other coaching session and make new commitments, because that person has shown me that this is exactly the experience that they are creating that is limiting, that they'll make a commitment and not follow through. So they're showing me exactly what their issue is. It's not planning. Mm-hmm. It's so what I may want to do, and this may vary a little bit, but one possibility is if they had a specific plan on a specific time and knew exactly what the next step is, then I want to know, how did you decide to not take that step? They decided it's Tuesday at 11 o'clock. They're going to sit down and do it. How did you decide not to do that? In other words, I want to look with them at what your internal conversation was at that instant. Did you decide, nah, I'm going to skip it and do internal bargaining and say, well, I'm going to do it next Tuesday? Or I'm just going to have fun instead. They defied their own authority. Or did they get scattered and lose the focus? Or did they not have a specific enough first step? I want to hear that internal conversation, because that's the experience that immediately led to putting something off. Now, at another level, let's use a little wider angle focus here. There are two fundamental motivations that we have as human beings: to avoid pain and to achieve pleasure. If someone gets to the point of doing something that they have decided is in their best interest, they have planned for, and they don't do it, well, it can't be said automatically that they sabotage themselves. They may get to the point of doing it, and the automatic role, the automatic script is to avoid pain. And they avoid pain by not doing it. Let me use kind of a goofy example. You know, I want to generate more money and create wealth. But it may have a specific plan, they get to that and think, well, you know, I don't think I can do that, or I just wasn't made for doing that. I'd do that and then I wouldn't know what else to do. So this is where it may be helpful to look at some basic coaching questions at this juncture. What's the greater pain if you don't do it? And what's the greater pleasure if you do follow through? So that dynamic of the basic fundamental motivators of avoiding pain and seeking pleasure may be operative, but we can convert that into a coaching question or two questions and look at that as someone assesses and then recommits to a specific plan with that understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah, so the open-ended, you know, the coaching questions in that situation reveal the kind of the deeper issues. Like it allows, like kind of the questions kind of shine a light on the client's own behaviors so that they can begin to see them differently and then shift and adjust.
Yeah, exactly. And this, you know, just another way of saying, what do we talk about? What do we mean as we listen for the process of how we hear the client's
mm-hmm.
story with us unfolding? And in that example I just gave, the surface story is I want to make more money. I want to generate wealth. I want you to help me. But then the shadow story in that example
mm-hmm.
is, you know, getting to the point of taking the first step and then getting afraid or dismissing it or avoiding the pain. And that illuminates both the surface story and the shadow story, which is why perhaps the client has felt stuck. Because if the surface story and the shadow story go in opposite directions, they're stuck, which is exactly
right.
Why they need us. They don't need a therapist or a counselor or an analyst to go back into the past and look at why and dynamics and history and, you know, your relationship with your mother. They need the choice architecture of this moment of looking at this decision here and now, one simple step at a time. So this is what we're seeing as we look at how they came to make this choice of this behavior to say no to themselves or to their commitment, and we expand it. And hopefully this is helpful to give them a different way of looking at things, a way to proceed despite the discomfort of change of the script.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're accustomed to ending that discomfort of doing something new and different in a typical way. And it works every time because it immediately ends the dissonance, the discomfort. So,
right.
We create a different kind, a different level of scrutiny and maybe dissonance by saying, what's the greater pain if you don't proceed and what's the greater pleasure if you do? So that's a little reframing in itself. And if somebody, an example would be, a client begins to, well, the problem is, that's where I want to interrupt because we both know what the problem is. What's the possibility? What would be how we frame something is so important because it boosts up a mindset
mm-hmm.
of how to proceed. Let me give you the simplest, and you know, and you've heard me looking for the simplest kind of research that's possible. Here's the best research I've seen on this. So you probably have heard me say, for a soccer penalty kick, everybody is the same 12 yards away from a 72-square-foot target guarded by one goalie. Now, when the framework is playing to win, making the goal will result in a win, kickers are successful 92% of the time. Now, if the framework is different, playing not to lose, in other words, the team is down by one, you got to make it to tie, and if you miss, your team's going to lose. When that's the case, the success rate is 62%.
Well,
same target, two different mindsets that results in a 30% difference in success rate. In the threat mindset, expectations are high, there's a feeling of judgment, can't make a single mistake, you play not to lose. So the result may be more anxiety and booting up this entirely different mindset than playing to win. So this is the juncture that we operate with a client to look at what's the possibility here. To look at a possibility rather than anxiety or problem or in the mindset that someone's accustomed.
Right. Yeah, that's a great answer. Thank you. Totally. And I love the shadow story piece. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, great question and really important and so fundamental. Yeah, I'm interested in other ideas or perspectives or other thoughts or questions. Anyone?
Dave, do you have any comments on working with a coaching client when they're, maybe they have a sense of where they are in that, but they don't know where they want to go? When that, where do you want to go? What, with your possibility thinking, it's hard for people then to create little steps on the roadmap along the way because they don't know what their final destination is. And when a client comes to us with clarity on where they are, but they're not sure where they're going, you know, any insights around that?
Well, and this is so basic to what we do in coaching because where they are and where they want to go, all of that whole middle ground is a system, a map. So where someone is, the simple step may not be where they want to go, but what's the next step? What's the first step to get to a goal, to create a map? And this is where we can't be too simple or too specific. So what they do as a first, if we hear an objective, a purpose, then we may want to help look at what a destination would be that that person would consider productive or successful. Then if there's some idea, some notion of where somebody wants to get to that we can develop, then that's when you can begin with a systematic approach. And again, the goal is not what's successful, it's the system, the creating of a map. And that's what we do as coaches, is to help someone. And you can't get too simple or too specific. When you
maybe broad. You're saying like broad. So you're saying like a broad idea of like, oh, I want to re-enter the workforce, or but not necessarily what career niche, or so that helps the client think of just directionally what they're looking to move towards.
If they want to re-enter the workforce, then I would look at what do they need to do to create a map for them. Have they done the research? Do they know where they want to get to and what's required and where they are now, so that they will know when we hang up the phone, what are they going to do in that first 45 minutes after we are through talking? What are they going to do to take those steps? And together, we can look at that to their objective or their purpose, if it's a specific goal, but to look at where they are now and what's next and what's after what's next. To look at that map so they're not lost, because usually when someone doesn't do something, they're not necessarily resisting. They're just thinking about it in a way that doesn't help them create a map to get there. It's too broad, too abstract, or not specific enough, or it's not a very specific systematic way of getting there. So that's what we want to do with a client for their map, not ours. And that's why we keep the focus on the client as the point of reference instead of converting it to our story by suggestions or whatever. But to develop the client story and not abandon that, because as soon as they're on their own, they're going to have to deal with the uncertainty, the trepidation, or just the focus of the next step, and then the focus on the next step. So it may be more broadly that we help a client with issues about focusing on one thing. And at the other end of that spectrum, the clients who have challenges with attention, that's more specific. But the model, I think, that is so useful for that and for new coaches about just focusing on the client, because often they'll think, well, do I need to do this, or am I asking the right question, or I wonder what, or I really want this. They're all kind of, so the model here is mindfulness meditation and focusing just on your breath. Almost every coaching client knows that, coaching student also knows that model about how you get relaxed, focused just on your breath, breathing in relaxation, breathing out tension. If you have a thought or if there's some distracting idea, then you let that go. If you're visually oriented, you let it float away and refocus on your breath. Same in the beginning with a coach, with a client, to refocus on that client story, on their experience, not on, am I doing it right, or should I ask the wrong, but the client, to refocus just like refocusing on your breath. And in the beginning, just like when you try meditation, the brain's job description is to create distraction and energize. So you're going to have thoughts. That's not doing it wrong. That's part of the process, to refocus on your breathing, to refocus on the client. For that client, once we're nowhere on the horizon, to focus on what they do that's next, and to put that in the context of the next hour or the next time frame of plan. But that's a model for focus and for attention to that focus, which is something that's really fundamental that we do in coaching. Does that make sense? And does that fit with what you were pointing out, which is a great point?
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Oh. Other thoughts or challenges or questions or things you want to add? I mean, some of you have had significant experience coaching. I'm interested to hear your thoughts and perspectives. Well, if we conclude now, I want to add just two basic things. One is, what's your most important takeaway from this discussion? Anyone? Would you share that, please? Doesn't have to be profound. Just what's your takeaway?
Hey, Dave, I liked what you were talking about when you were saying just really paying attention to how people present themselves so that you get a better idea of not necessarily specifically talking about like what their roadmap is, what their goals are, but really what, you know, like when somebody, like you were saying, when somebody comes to you and they didn't do what they said they were going to do, you know, that sells a lot, and really paying attention to that. I think that's really helpful in trying to understand people and basically, you know, how to be a better coach when you start to understand those things.
Yeah, nice highlight, and I like the way you put it. Thank you. Yes. Who else?
I know that. I love the idea of the client just showing us how they are experiencing it, and that is more important than anything that they might say. So, it was a really new way of seeing the client and getting a chance to experience that client's perspective. That was great.
Yeah, and that's why I emphasize that we have to have that working alliance to be able to get away with saying what we need to say. If somebody has an unconscious bias and we highlight it and look at it collaboratively together, then it's no longer unconscious, but it was unconscious for a reason, and that means it's not going to be an easy acceptance and embrace. So this is the collaborative framework. This is what's unique to coaches. Every other professional engagement is one of consultation.
Mm.
Ours is one of collaboration. So that's what's so important about developing that working alliance. So thanks for highlighting that. There was another...
I was going to say, and I've heard you talk about this before, but it was just really impactful today. Working with clients to revise their operating model from a challenge to an opportunity. And you talked about how, you know, a client or people, you know, will view something as how they view it or how they take in something is, you know, you can look at it as anxiety or excitement, like anxiety being like danger, stop, don't go there, stay stuck, you know, and excitement as possibility and wonder and exploration, you know, and that just makes a lot of sense. You know, I mean, I see it in clients. You know, you can see it as we have conversations and talk with people, but it just really kind of drills down into how important constructing great open-ended questions to help our clients, for us to see how their experience, like what their operating model looks like, but also to invite them to shift from anxiety to opportunity. You know, and just to hear that, like as we're really engaged and connected with our clients, we see those open-ended questions really shifting people in such powerful ways. And then to watch that play itself out in them determining a next step or a goal, that's just really exciting.
Yeah, I think this is such an important aspect of what we do as coaches, is to help someone with that final step in the roadmap to program new identity, to program the changes in their operating system, which can help them own it a bit more and understand it a bit more. You know, an example might be in the process of working with someone, simply to reflect, I hear how you're dealing with that differently now, that this emotional trigger was something that set you off before, and it would take much longer to get grounded and centered again. And you're recognizing it and doing it earlier and with less emotional charge. And that process is continuing as you reflect on that and are creating a different way of responding. So to recognize that process, I think, can help someone revise their operating model, which is to say their identity. They're no longer just spontaneously triggered by emotional things or reacting to people in the same way, but they're recognizing and collaborating, not just in the content of it and the strategies of it, but also in a wide-angle lens here, the process of that transformation of their fundamental operating system, and they feel it. That's the mm-hmm. experience that leads, is they're feeling it and seeing that they bounce back way more quickly. They recognize it sooner. They get less into the depth of that emotional response. Or simply yes. to recognize that of all the people who they want to change their script in order to make it better for me, you know, I have to give up what I can't determine, and that ends at the level of my skin. I can't determine how anybody else, I can respond, I can determine what I think and do and feel and experience moment by moment. But mm-hmm. that's the end of it, so that's a particular freedom in itself.
Yeah, this has been really great. Thank you.
Absolutely, yeah. Anything, I know we just have a minute or two, Holly. Anything else anybody wants to add or ask?
I have a silly question. You had mentioned the roadmap that made it sound like there's a handout, and is that something that we can attach to the rebroadcast of this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You have a copy of that, right?
I do.
Okay.
I'm sure that's available for everyone.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
So my two conclusions, okay, since you asked, we always, and this is one of the most important things anyone has ever said to me, we always create time for what's really important. And the most significant times of our lives are when we break the script. Thanks so much. Any questions, comments, follow-up, feel free to email me. I promise to get back to you. Thanks so much for your attention and listening and interacting. I value that very, very much. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr. Dave. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Dave.
Absolutely.